According to his promise, we are looking for new heavens and a new earth in which righteousness dwells. Therefore, beloved, since you look for these things, be diligent to be found by him in peace, spotless and blameless, and grow in the grace and knowledge of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. Our growth comes through the scriptures. Join me in Song of Solomon this afternoon. Song of Solomon. Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, Song of Solomon. And it's really not a long book, but there are 8 chapters, and we will cover all 8 chapters today. This is designed to be in one fell swoop, or swell foop, as the case may be. This is day 159 in our Through the Bible reading calendar. And as Ron Rhodes has structured his daily devotion, day 159, he titled it The Joy of Marital Love. And he has a good devotion there. I'm not going to read that to you. Ron does take a different interpretive choice with respect to Song of Solomon than I take, than Ralph Braun took, than other faithful pastors, Colonel R.B. Thieme, others. And I'll be describing that here shortly as well as we work our way through. So, Song of Solomon. Before we do get started, let's take a moment for silent prayer, calling upon our Father and his faithfulness to bless our time in the truth. Shall we pray? Most gracious Heavenly Father, we come before you once again, thankful for your faithfulness, thankful for a full day, Father, in your scriptures. We've already had 3 morning sessions in the book of Proverbs, and now, Father, for Song of Solomon, we call upon your faithfulness to open our eyes, open our ears, soften our hearts. Bless this study today. Thank you for this book. We thank you and praise you in Christ's name. Amen. All right, Song of Solomon is an amazing text, and I think it's an expansion on Proverbs 5, and I'm going to explain that as well when we see it. There are so many passages. Did you read the newsletter that came out this morning, by the way? There are so many passages in Proverbs that are warnings related to a young man and the dangers of promiscuity. And so from chapter 1 all the way through chapter 9, there's about 5 dominant passages there warning about the adulteress, warning about the strange woman and the snares and the temptations that it is. But nested within chapter 5 is a text that extols the blessings of marital love, that actually shows what God has designed for a man and a woman together in marriage. And that's just a short paragraph there in Proverbs 5. And that is what gets expanded in 8 chapters of Song of Solomon, in a sense, because it is showing the benefits of marriage and the snares with promiscuity, the struggles with young people before marriage, and the trouble you can get into if you awaken love before the right time, that is premarital. And so those warnings come out as well. And you'll see this for what it is. Just a couple of things as we get started. It is introduced as the Song of Songs, which is Solomon's. And this is the idiom, the Hebrew idiom that speaks about the greatest. When you double a noun like the Holy of Holies, that means the most holy. The King of Kings is the greatest king. The Song of Songs is the superlative. There can be no song better than this. This is the ultimate song in the Bible, and it's called the Song of Songs, which is Solomon's. Either written by him or dedicated to him or ironically about him, because when you're thinking about marital success, you have to really redefine success, because Solomon married 1,000 times over, right? 700 wives, 300 concubines. He was a train wreck. He was absolutely destroyed his capacity for marital intimacy. How can you be intimate with 1,000 women? You can't. And that's the sadness of it there. And that comes out in this text. We're going to see that for what it is. May he kiss me with the kisses of his mouth. Like in Princess Bride, is this a kissing story? Yes, this is a kissing story, and more than just kissing. Okay, we're going to get all of the description in this book. The rabbis would not allow a young person to read this book. You had to be 30 to read this book in the rabbinic traditions of the Middle Ages and earlier. So anyway, and I think that would kind of boomerang. If I heard there was something I couldn't read till I was 30, I guarantee you I'd be reading that at 10 or 5 or something, just to find out what they were hiding from me. Let me just talk with a couple of things. the two dominant views. We're going to dismiss all of the things that we can just dismiss out of hand, okay? We interpret the Bible literally. If God wrote it, he meant it. This is what it says. This is what it means. And so we don't allegorize anything unless the Bible makes it clear that it is a metaphor. It is an allegory. It is designed to be taken that way. We're going to have a very literal approach with this text, as we do with any text in our study. So we're going to dismiss the idea that this is an allegory. We're going to dismiss the idea that this is a picture of Christ in the church, okay? Because remember, this is the Old Testament still. The church is a mystery. Nobody in the Old Testament knows anything about the bride of Christ, the time in which we live, in which Jews and Gentiles are one body in Christ. Take that off the table. And if you're reading a commentary that says this is an allegory of Christ in the church, throw it away and get a better commentary. All right, I can recommend a few. In fact, I have 119 of them that I went through, and I didn't read them word for word, but for about four key passages, I consulted all 119. And as far as the overall interpretation, I teach the three-character view, and that is rare, all right? Out of 119 commentaries, I think three of them teach the three-commentary view. Ralph Braun teaches the three-commentary view, or he did, the three-character view. The two-character view is the one that's much more common. Among those that don't allegorize, among those that take it literally, they read through this text and they say, hey, here is a man and a woman, they're getting married and they're excited and they have sex and everything happens the way it plays out. But looking at it as a two-character view, which leaves Solomon and Shulamith, the woman, and it equates, Solomon is the shepherd, okay? Solomon is the shepherd in the two-character view. I'm going to show you why that's so problematic and why you need the third character. So Solomon is not the shepherd, okay? The shepherd is who she loves. The shepherd is who she wants to marry. Solomon is who she stuck with because Solomon saw her and said, ooh, I want her, and he brings her into the harem, okay? So this is about her rescue away from Solomon, and this is about how true love wins out because it's got a happy ending. She does, at the end of the book, she's married to the shepherd. She's not married to Solomon. And so it's got a good ending with the three-character drama view. And to me, it's really straightforward, and we're going to go through it today. Those that object to the three-character view have some of the strangest reasons for objecting, which boggles my mind in a lot of ways, because they don't want Solomon to be the villain. They say, oh, you're making Solomon the villain. Okay, well, is that not possible? Is that not acceptable? Have you not read the Bible and how Solomon ended his life? He married 1,000 women, and in this book, he's just getting started. In this book, let me give you a preview here. In Song of Solomon 6:8, he says, there are 60 queens and 80 concubines and maidens without number. So he's at the edge, if he's not already off the cliff, okay? He is at the edge on his way off going off the cliff. He's not yet to the 1,000 women, but he's working on it. He wants Shulamith now to become number 141, okay? And that's his goal. And he's trying to impress her, and he's going to be, you know, giving her all these jewels and perfumes and money and all this, dazzling her with a big city. And she's not a big city girl. Okay, and she's already been dazzled, but it's not with him, it's with this boy, this youth that she grew up with. And so that's going to be part of the story as well. But this is one of the key verses that I read 119 commentaries on, how they rendered this in different ways. And those who tried to defend, there's 140 other women, but you're special. My dove, my perfect one, is unique. Yeah, okay. I mean, I can believe a lot of things. I can believe the Red Sea, Noah's flood. I can believe the creation of, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. But I struggle with, there are 60 queens, 80 concubines, and maidens without number, but my dove, my perfect one, is unique. Okay? As I read this, not just this, but this is a big one, throughout the 8 chapters here, I have no problem making Solomon the villain. Okay, and we're going to see Tuesday night when we come back, we're going to be in 1 Kings chapter 11. We're going to see Solomon's marriages. We're going to see his idolatry. We're going to see his worship of Chemosh. We're going to see child sacrifice. We're going to see some evil things that Solomon was involved with. And once you grasp the enormity of his failure, the wisest man who ever lived plunged into the decadence that he plunged into, Because he had the money. I mean, I probably would have done the same thing. If I'd had his kind of money, you know, how much trouble would we be in with these things? So, anyway, this is what we're going to look at. So let's get into it. In the outline, my notes are on the left. The Bible's on the right. Don't confuse the two. My notes may have all kinds of mistakes. The right-hand column is God-breathed and inspired. That is not open for debate. The song begins with Shulamith. That's the woman's name. Her expression of love and her plea for rescue. And that's what we'll see here in these early verses. I'm going to go ahead and call her Shulamith. I don't have any problem with that. The text calls her that. A lot of arguments and debates about, well, what does that mean? Is this a Shunammite? Arnold Fruchtenbaum defends her as a Shunammite from the village of Shunem, similar to Abishag, the Shunammite that was David's bedwarmer at the end of his life. And tons of legends about things like that. Also, Shulamith is a feminine form of Solomon. And so, in a sense, whatever her name used to be, if Solomon marries her, she becomes Mrs. Solomon. So you can call 1,000 different women Shulamith, the woman of Solomon. But anyway, the truth is we don't know. We think she was a northern girl because of the geography that gets mentioned and the references she's familiar with. We'll talk about that as well. But the song does begin with the woman's expression of love and her plea for rescue. So may he kiss me with the kisses of his mouth, for your love is better than wine. The word there for love is dode, and we have dode throughout this text. And it's not the normal Old Testament word for love. This is very frequently, this is sexual love. This is physical love, like we think of with eros and in the Greek and other languages. Your love is better than wine. Your oils have a pleasing fragrance. Your name is like purified oil. Therefore, the maidens love you. Draw me after you and let us run together. The king has brought me into his chambers. So, in the two-character drama, she's singing to Solomon. She loves him. Sex with him is great. Your love is better than wine. But draw me after you. Let us run together. The king has brought me into his chambers. Now, switching from the second person to the third person, telling your lover, draw me after you, let's run together, because the king has brought me into his chambers. To me, there's another verbal disconnect there that struggles with the two-character view. It can be overcome. Grammatically, it can be overcome, but it's awkward to phrase it that way. So I view this as a plea, as an expression of love and a plea for rescue. Get me out of here. The king has brought me into his chambers. And this is, his last chance. By the way, the New American Standard Bible has all these footnotes. You're going to see these forever. Translation footnotes, other grammatical notes. Also, like a drama, you may find that there are speakers that are identified. And we're going to agree with most of the interpretive choices, but the speakers are not in the Hebrew manuscripts. They're not in the original. In fact, some of the earliest attempts to try to sort it out, who's speaking here, sometimes they switch speakers in the middle of a chorus, and you have to be careful or you miss it. You miss that there's a different subject in view. And so the little helping things there that tell you, okay, the bride is speaking here, that can be helpful. And then the groom is speaking, the bride is speaking. This is a chorus that's speaking. We, where it turns plural. We will rejoice in you and be glad. We will extol your love more than wine. Rightly do they love you. So here's where we're starting off. The woman is expressing her love and her plea to be rescued. She's not singing to Solomon. She's singing to her shepherd lover, her lover. I'm going to call her consistently lover. We're going to be kind of piecing through some of the backstory as we get into these later chapters. The love expressed is physical sexual love that is confined to the marriage union of husband and wife. The verb is, or the noun is dowd. Looks like, if you know anybody named Dowd. It's actually pronounced dode with a long O sound. Strong's number is 1730. And it's actually the same etymology where David, the name David, comes from. David means beloved, and he's the only one in the Bible with that name. But it comes from, it doesn't come from Ahav. It doesn't come from more normal words for love. It comes from this sexual love, the dowd kind of love. Shulamith praises her lover for his integrity. To me, that's another big clue. Your name is like purified oil. Therefore, the maidens love you. If the basis for your name or your love is your name, your reputation, your integrity, Solomon's not the object of that praise. Okay? Because Solomon, by this point, with all of these women, with the idolatry, with the sin, with the Ecclesiastes lifestyle that he's already pursuing, his is not a name of integrity at this point in the drama. But the shepherd is. The shepherd has always had the name of integrity. The shepherd is one willing to lay down his life. And we're going to see that. All right, then we have the chorus, these women that are singing, I take this as the king's harem, celebrating the love of this man of integrity. You can imagine, if you're part of a harem, if you're in a building or a place with 140 other women, and you hear the story about a man with integrity, oh, tell me more. Who is this man? You know, because they, you know, would like to meet him someday. Not that they ever will. All right. Shulamith explains her darkened skin to the women of Solomon's court as the result of her life's hard work. And so we're back to the woman again. I am black but lovely, O daughters of Jerusalem, like the tents of Kedar, like the curtains of Solomon. Do not stare at me because I am swarthy, for the sun has burned me. Now, so is she racially dark-skinned? Is she, just burned because of the sun, or both? Probably both in this sense. The sun has burned me. My mother's sons were angry with me. Notice, not her brothers, but her mother's sons. And we're not clear on her background. There's not a father in the picture. There may have been other fathers at previous times. Obviously, there had to be. But at the time this drama unfolds, she's really, there is no father to speak for her. And it's not clear that her mother's even still alive. But she has brothers that accepted the bride price that Solomon offered for her. And so now she's stuck. My mother's sons were angry with me. They made me caretaker of the vineyards, but I have not taken care of my own vineyard. So just like Cinderella, you know, she's sweeping the floor and the mice are singing and making the dresses and whatnot. Okay. But she's not fixing her own dress for the ball. She's not actually maintaining her own beauty, her own skin, her own hair, and so forth. She feels very unworthy in the harem. I mean, when you get put in the king's harem and you're surrounded by all these women that have the perfume and the hair and the makeup and the dresses and whatever else, she is not comfortable where she has found herself. So tell me, O you whom my soul loves, where do you pasture your flock? Where do you make it lie down at noon? Why should I be like one who veils herself beside the flocks of your companions? She's begging for her rescue. She's lamenting that she does not know where her shepherd lover is and anticipates the imminent danger she's in at being separated from him forever. If this marriage gets consummated, if it's finalized, if she goes from the maiden to the either concubine or wife, and there's another question, we'll talk about that because we're not comfortable with polygamy these days, but there are 60 queens and 80 concubines and maidens without number. That's kind of how he's sorted his women. And right now, she's in that maiden category, about to get promoted. Call it a promotion. She's about to get reallocated as soon as the wedding is complete. Okay? And then I don't know how he decides, you know, okay, concubine, wife. I mean, probably, given her economic status, she's not wife material, okay? She's not, they're all princesses. She's not. So the best she's going to end up with is concubine status for the rest of her life. Anyway, why should I be like one who veils herself? At the moment she becomes the concubine or the wife, then she is veiled, she's off limits, she'll never see the shepherd lover again, and he'll never see her again. And this is how close it is. All right. The king's harem, that is the wives, concubines, and maidens, they're going to invite Shulamith to leave Jerusalem and return to her life as a shepherdess. And they give her this idea here. I think she already had the idea anyway. If you yourself do not know, most beautiful among women, go forth on the trail of the flock and pasture your young goats by the tents of the shepherds. So go back to the country, go back wherever you came from, go away. If that shepherd is who you want, then get out of here. Escape, flee. Which is curious to me too. Because if she's comfortable around them, uncomfortable around them, What's their attitude towards her? It's like they're taunting her to leave. All right. Solomon woos Shulamith with compliments of her physical beauty. Remember, for the setting for this, she's in, the king has brought me into his chambers. So she's clearly been relocated. She's been moved. She's in Jerusalem, and this wooing is happening here. He hosts a great feast. Shulamith's perfume brought about these memories. Let's read these verses. All right. To me, my darling, you are like my mare among the chariots of Pharaoh. Some of these are lost to us, okay? If I called my wife a horse, she would not be complimented. She wouldn't feel pleased with that. But 3,000 years ago, this was sexy. This was enticing. And you have the footnote there that tells you that this is, I have compared you to. All right. But this is definitely the groom who is speaking, or a male voice is speaking. Your cheeks are lovely with ornaments, your neck with strings of beads. Of course, he could point out that she couldn't afford those. He's the one that gave them to her. He's got her all decked out with these jewels and these beads and whatnot. We will make for you ornaments of gold with beads of silver. That's some of the harem girls that are contributing to the issue there. All right, and then she now sings, while the king was at his table, my perfume gave forth its fragrance. And she's smelling probably perfume she's never had before in her life, a brand new experience for her. But it's remembering, it's causing her to think back. This perfume brought about memories of her shepherd lover. And I'm going to keep calling him that. We'll talk some more. By the way, if you want the chapter titles that Ralph gives, this is his outline of the 8 chapters. And again, the Shulamite woman, the daughters of Jerusalem, her thoughts of her shepherd lover. So Ralph called her the same thing, called him the shepherd lover. The woman's search for her lover, his desire to marry him, glimpses of the rival lover, Solomon, and all his glory. The wooing of Solomon, she says no. The woman's thoughts concerning her shepherd lover. Solomon woos, she refuses. The Shulamite woman escapes. Shulamite lover and shepherd lover together again. So like a happy ending with a 3-character drama. Okay? Anyway, that's the Ralph Braun chapter titles for Song of Solomon. So this is how he taught it. This was his view. Colonel Thieme taught it this way, others. In fact, in the 1700s, 1800s, this view started to gain better ground and almost became dominant, but then it faded away and they went back to the 2-character drama view. Actually, in most cases, they've just allegorized everything and let it go. Anyway, while the king was at his table, my perfume gave forth its fragrance. My beloved is to me a pouch of myrrh, which lies all night between my breasts. My beloved is to me a cluster of henna blossoms in the vineyards of En-Gedi. And we've got some pay attention to every geographic reference, all of the rural outdoor setting things that she speaks to. Alien to Solomon, alien to the palace, alien to the big city, alien to, and even the idea of Solomon being a shepherd requires a lot of imagination. You have to kind of assume that David and Bathsheba wanted to somehow send Solomon out to the shepherd area where he could get have a childhood similar to David's childhood. And there's nothing in the text to indicate that. That's pure speculation that Solomon ever, saw a sheep in his life as far as a shepherd would be concerned. All right, the vineyards of En-Gedi. How beautiful you are, my darling, how beautiful you are. Your eyes are like doves. How handsome you are, my beloved, and so pleasant. Indeed, our couch is luxuriant. So there's praise back and forth. And there's a lot of this in the book. There's a lot of language where the man is telling the woman that he finds her attractive, that she's hot, that he's describing her body very explicitly. And she describes his body very explicitly. And this is the kind of language that's appropriate between lovers, between husband and wife in marriage. It's not appropriate between unmarried people. Anyway, so she has these memories. The shepherd may not have riches, but in her eyes, he has all the perfume that she could desire. And their time together in the woodlands is all the palace she could ever want. So some people view this as her and Solomon talking back and forth. I view this as her and the shepherd talking back and forth. How handsome you are, my beloved, and so pleasant. Indeed, our couch is luxuriant. The beams of our houses are cedars, our rafters, cypresses. So they're out there in the woods enjoying nature, okay? And to them, that's all the palace they could ever ask for because they have each other and true love and so forth. Okay, but admittedly, David lived in a cedar palace, Solomon lived in a cedar palace, and so I'm not calling these people fools for thinking that this is Solomon in view here, that the woman is overwhelmed with the luxury and she loves, it's Cinderella at the ball and the prince noticed her and now she's going to live happily ever after with 140 other women, okay, or 999 other women, as the case may be. Okay, so there's chapter 1. In the three-character drama, she's where she doesn't want to be. She's trying to find a way out. Even the other women are encouraging her to get out of here. And all of the experiences, the perfumes, the food, the wine, I mean, everything is overwhelming. And all she can do is think about her past. She can think about the previous boyfriend, the previous lover, as the case turns out to be. All right. Shulamith delights in the shepherd's pet names for her. I am the Rose of Sharon, the Lily of the Valleys. That was the name he gave to her, and she likes it. That's her, Solomon didn't know anything about that, but this is her delight. Like a lily among the thorns, so is my darling among the maidens. Doesn't mind that her skin is black and she's an outdoor kind of girl. He says she's beautiful, and he gives her these names, and she loves these names. She reflects back to the romance that she enjoyed with her shepherd lover. Like an apple tree among the trees of the forest. And I'm going to keep reading it as it is. It could be an apricot instead of an apple. I don't care, okay? Whatever, if it's an apple tree or an apricot tree, it's still a metaphor. The point is we're using metaphors to describe sexual issues. Like an apple tree among the trees of the forest, so is my beloved among the young men. In his shade I took great delight and sat down, and his fruit was sweet to my taste. He has brought me to his banquet hall, and his banner over me is love. Sustain me with raisin cakes, refresh me with apples, because I am lovesick. And we're going to start to notice some of these other things, and I should have mentioned the banner. His banner over me is love. And this is a snare. Young people, be warned. His banner over me is love. Oh, he loves me. And so that makes this right. No. Marriage makes this right. The idea, and this is a snare, and it still is to this day, always has been, always will be. We don't want to confuse the God's design for marriage and sexual intimacy is what it is. And anything other than that is non-biblical. And it's not sanctified because, we're in love. Or, we're committed. Or, we decided we're going to be exclusive and we're not going to see other people. And this sanctifies it. This makes it right because we have a long-term commitment. If you're not married, you're not married. Okay? And instead of serial monogamy with multiple partners over a lifetime, God designed the man to leave his father and mother, to cleave to the woman, to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. And that's what we're illustrating here with this drama. Anyway, his banner over me is love. So sustain me with raisin cakes. They were thought to be aphrodisiacs. Refresh me with apples, possibly apricots, because I am lovesick. In other words, the emotional attachments are leaving me compromised, volitionally compromised, damaged, poor judgment, shall we say. Let his left hand be under my head and his right hand embrace me. Okay? This is pretty graphic. This is described. They're horizontal in this verse. Okay? That's how you can put a hand under a head and his right hand embrace me. So we're going to see. I mean, this is, they're doing this. This is, there's hands moving. There's flavors that are described. There's aromas, smells. There's feels. There's taste. There's appearances. Things that you can see, hear, smell, taste, touch. All of the senses are involved. It's a very sensual book in all of the idioms and things that are here. So reflecting back to the romance that she enjoyed with the shepherd, physical intimacy, to whatever extent we conclude, and some have it more comprehensive and some have it more limited, But it does lead to a more private setting. There's a progression between verse 3 and verse 4. So at first, she is sitting. He's the tree and she's sitting under his shade. And then he brings me to the banquet hall. The banner over me is love. There's a progression. And then there's the apple cakes. There's another progression. Then they're horizontal in verse 6. Okay? So physical intimacy to some extent led to a more private setting. The shepherd's banner indicates the claim he has over her soul and their intentions to be married. Okay? Now, so far, falling in love, there's nothing wrong with falling in love. There's nothing wrong with being Twitter-pated and being, you know, smitten. All right? But when you reach to this point, you are either going to start making the marriage arrangements or you're going to back off and realize, man, we're playing with fire. We're in trouble here. And they didn't back off. They found a place. Okay, let's find somewhere more secluded. Wining and dining left her lovesick, in the Hebrew expression there. And the passion of the romance culminated with a desire for sexual intercourse. Now, whether they did or not, you can debate that, and scholars will talk about it. But his left hand under my head, they are definitely horizontal in that verse. But then notice the warning, and this happens three times in the book. I adjure you, O daughters of Jerusalem. An adjuration is a vow. It's an oath. It is, if you take an oath yourself, but an adjuration is when you put somebody else under an oath. When like in the third or second person, you are placing somebody under a deity obligation. I adjure you, O daughters of Jerusalem. And she doesn't name Yahweh, she doesn't name Baal, and she doesn't name any of the gods by the gazelles or by the hinds of the field, which is very naturalistic and very interesting. I think it betrays her rural upbringing. That you do not arouse or awaken love until she pleases. This is the warning. It can get out of control. And it's a warning to arouse or to awaken. And it's the same Hebrew verb, but it has a different stem and it gets intensified. The arousal starts it, then the awakening, it's too late. Okay, you've gone too far. So you can think of this. She's warning the daughters of Jerusalem about the dangers of premarital sexual activity. Warnings about awakening things before it's time, before it's appropriate, before it's biblical. Arousing, you can think of as petting, whatnot, amorous embracing, caressing, kissing. But then the awakening, that's more than the arousing. That's fully awake, the sexual intercourse. This warning is repeated twice more. You'll see it in chapter 3. You'll see it in chapter 8. It's given three times. And notice who she's warning here. O daughters of Jerusalem. Remember, you had the queens, you had the concubines, you had the maidens without number. As those maidens that are referred to here as these daughters of Jerusalem. They're the choir for the drama. They're the choir in the song. And she's warning them. You're playing with fire. You can get burned. The shepherd sneaks into the harem. Some people think this is a dream, this is her wishful thinking. My suspicion is he's actually sneaking in, that when she has dreams, she's going to have at least two dreams, when she has those dreams, they get described as dreams. This is not described in that way. I think she actually hears something and she's convinced, you know, whether she's right or wrong. Listen, my beloved, behold, he's coming, climbing on the mountains, leaping on the hills. So she hears something from outside the harem window and she thinks, this is the shepherd. This is Dodi. This is my beloved. This is, we don't know his name either, but he's coming, climbing on the mountains, leaping on the hills. My beloved is like a gazelle or a young stag. Behold, he is standing behind our wall. He is looking through the windows. He is peering through the lattice. I don't think this is Solomon. He doesn't have to be a window peeper. He doesn't have to sneak into his own harem. He can have any woman he wants. He just tells the servant which one to bring on which night. And Yeah, I think this is the shepherd here in this view. My beloved responded and said to me, "Arise, my darling, my beautiful one, and come along." He's willing to bust her out of there. He's willing to rescue her. For behold, the winter is past. And if she's dreaming, then, you know, these are the words she wants to hear. She's just hoping that he will come and save her. Winter is past, the rain is over and gone, the flowers have already appeared in the land. The time has arrived for pruning the vines, and the voice of the turtle dove has been heard in our land. Memories that she has of their time together, memories pleasant memories of her rural youth. The fig tree has ripened its figs. The vines in blossom have given forth their fragrance. Arise, my darling, my beautiful one, and come along. Oh, my dove, in the clefts of the rock, in the secret place of the steep pathway, let me see your form. Let me hear your voice, for your voice is sweet and your form is lovely. Hebrew is very, I don't want to say vulgar, but it is explicit in all the ways that they describe physical appearances, faces and bodies and shapes and well-formed forms. And she had a well-formed form, according to these texts. The shepherd's climbing and leaping gets him into the palace grounds. The shepherd's plea for Shulamith to return to their land. There's a clue. To their land. And that's in here. Where did I miss it? Arise, my darling, my beautiful one, come along. Flowers have appeared. There. The voice of the turtle dove has been heard in our land. Wherever she's from, it's in the north. Wherever Solomon's from, he was born in King David's palace. They don't have the same land. This is a clue. All right. The shepherd's anguish at her hidden condition indicates that he is unsuccessful in seeing her and freeing her. The king's harem then sounds the alarm. There are foxes in the vineyard, and so the shepherd must escape. Catch the foxes for us. The little foxes that are ruining the vineyards while our vineyards are in blossom. My beloved is mine, I am his. He pastures his flock among the lilies until the cool of the day when the shadows flee away. Turn, my beloved, be like a gazelle or a young stag on the mountains of Bether. In other words, if you're not a gazelle, you may not escape out of here. The guards have been alerted. You gotta get out of here now. Because gazelles and stags do get hunted down. They do get shot. They do die if the guards are alerted that you're where you're not supposed to be. All right, now comes a dream. In chapter 3 comes the dream. Shulamith is troubled by a dream of her shepherd lover, reflecting the fear that she will never see him again. On my bed, night after night, I sought him. And we don't know how long this process takes. How long has she been away from home? How long did the journey take to Jerusalem? How many days was she being prepared? Esther was prepared for a whole year before she had the right kind of perfumes and dresses and things. That was later for Xerxes in Persia. But still, she's been brought in from Solomon's custom limousine. It's a traveling chariot. And she's now in the temple. I mean, she's now in the palace, in the harem, and there are wedding preparations being made. So however many nights this goes, she keeps dreaming of the shepherd. I sought him, whom my soul loves. I sought him, but did not find him. I must arise now and go about the city, in the streets and in the squares. I must seek him, whom my soul loves. I sought him, but did not find him. Now, this is clearly a dream. She's not allowed to roam Jerusalem looking, you know. The watchmen who make the rounds of the city found me, and I said, have you seen him whom my soul loves? Scarcely had I left them when I found him whom my soul loves. I held on to him and would not let him go until I had brought him into my mother's house, into the room of her who conceives me. Okay, now this is up north where she's from and her mother who may or may not still be alive, but there, this is a special place of intimacy, and she's been dreaming of this day. She's been dreaming of the day that they can be married and that they can consummate their marriage in her own birthing chamber. Again, the warning, I adjure you, O daughters of Jerusalem, by the gazelles or by the hinds of the field, that you will not arouse or awaken my love until she pleases. This is the warning. Don't play with this fire. If you're getting these, you know, these emotions stirred up, and this is tough, and I get this. We have, you know, teenagers and high schoolers and college kids, and you're young and you're healthy, and you've got hormones, and you're experiencing things you've never experienced when you were a little kid, but now you're growing into an adult, and this is a danger. You want to be on guard. Shulamith arrives for Solomon's wedding day with great fanfare. This next song is a song of amazing. This who is this question? This is the first of three rhetorical who is this questions posed when Shulamith arrives, when she's prepared for the wedding, and then when she flees, when she makes her escape. We'll have this who is this? It says what? It should be who. Who is this coming up from the wilderness like columns of smoke, perfumed with myrrh and frankincense, with all scented powders of the merchant? Behold, it is the traveling couch of Solomon, 60 mighty men around it, of the mighty men of Israel. All of them are wielders of the sword, expert in war. Each man has a sword at his side, guarding against the terrors of the night. It's his custom limousine. He's bringing in the next wife, the next treasure into his harem. King Solomon has made for himself a sedan chair from the timbers of Lebanon. He made its posts of silver, its back of gold, its seat of purple fabric. Well, that's cool. Purple fabric with its interior lovingly fitted out. Notice, by the daughters of Jerusalem. The maidens here actually had a hand in the decorations and the comfort of the limousine. Go forth, O daughters of Zion, and gaze on King Solomon with the crown with which his mother had crowned him on the day of his wedding and on the day of his gladness of heart. Notice, the issue isn't her, the issue is him. Solomon is awesome. And so, of course, he needs another wife. He is awesome. And, of course, there'll be another one next week and another one the week after that. And how fast do these have to come anyway if you're going to have 1,000 of them before you die? Okay, he reigns for 40 years, and he actually doesn't tip into darkness until at least 20 years, probably 25 years before he starts to really plunge off into this folly. Building the temple and building his palace and the fleet and all of the positive things right up to 1 Kings chapter 10 is a minimum of 20 to 25 years, and then we get to his folly with his Ecclesiastes and his Song of Solomon way of life. Also notice his mother's still alive. That would be Bathsheba there, on the day of his wedding, okay? The only wife that we know about in the narrative of 1 Kings is Pharaoh's daughter. That was his first wedding. It should have been his last wedding. It should have been his only wedding. And it was one in which Bathsheba took part and dressed him designed a crown for him and took part in this. And the day of his gladness of heart, has he had another one since then? Well, there's 60 queens and 80 concubines and maidens without number, but this one day, way back whenever, was the one that Bathsheba approved of, evidently. All right, so there's that. This is, the scene, the bringing Shulamith into the locality. We'll see more of those questions coming up. All right, chapter 4. Are we going to make it? Goodness, this is... I may have to stay till 6 or 7 or 8 o'clock tonight, maybe, for... All right, Solomon's going to praise the physical beauty of his soon-to-be 141st wife. All right? And some of this, it's tough because we don't find many of these things complimentary, but it's just a culture thing that doesn't translate. How beautiful you are, my darling, how beautiful you are. Your eyes are like doves behind your veil. Your hair is like a flock of goats that have descended from Mount Gilead, okay? Not attractive for us today, but maybe I'm wrong. Talk to me after class. I just don't find, Sharon doesn't like that. That's not complimentary. Your teeth are like a flock of newly shorn ewes, which have come up from their washing. That's kind of cool. All of which bear twins, and not one of them has lost her young. Okay, so not missing any teeth. They're well-shaped, they're clean, they're white, they're pretty. Okay, this is a pretty girl. She smells nice. All of this. Your lips are like scarlet thread. Your mouth is lovely. Your temples are like a slice of pomegranate behind your veil. It's been mentioned a couple times now, that veil. Your neck is like the Tower of David. Okay? You know, must have been an attractive tower. It was probably a slender tower. It probably, you know, compared to the thicker things around, that Tower of David was slender. Built with rows of stones on which are hung 1,000 shields. So it's really decked out. And he's given her necklaces and whatever gems. All around shields of the mighty men. Your two breasts are like two fawns, twins of a gazelle, which feed among the lilies. Okay? Appropriate for a husband and wife, the things you talk about. You don't talk about these body parts if you're not married with a person you're not married to. But this is in our Bible, so we're studying it. We're learning it. It gets mentioned more than once. Okay, this is something he kind of fixated on. And, until the cool of the day when the shadows flee away, I will go my way to the mountain of myrrh, to the hill of frankincense. That's code, okay? Some of this language, he intends to inspect those mountains a little bit more. All right. You are altogether beautiful, my darling, and there is no blemish in you. Okay, at least he hasn't found any yet. He's been inspecting pretty closely. Come with me from Lebanon, my bride, that you may come with me from Lebanon. See, yes, she's from the north. And however it was he met her, maybe he was traveling to Lebanon. There was arrangements he was making with the Phoenicians. He needed more lumber, whatever it was. He found her there and said, you're my next wife. And so she gets brought back. Come with me from Lebanon, journey down from the summit of Amana, from the summit of Senir and Hermon, from the dens of lions, from the mountains of leopards. You have made my heart beat faster, my sister, my bride. You have made my heart beat faster with a single glance of your eyes, with a single strand of your necklace. Now, my sister, my bride, that's awkward in our modern understanding, but the sister is the virgin in purity, and he's ready to make her his bride, and that's the language there. All right. How beautiful is your love, my sister, my bride. How much better is your love than wine, and the fragrance of your oils than all kinds of spices. Now again, sometimes we have dode, sometimes we have ahava. This is dode. This is the sexual love. I don't believe they've consummated. I think he's anticipating it at this point. He's waiting for their marriage night to sleep with her. But there's some other indicators that make us wonder. So stay tuned. Your lips, my bride, drip honey. Honey and milk are under your tongue. How does he know that? Okay. And the fragrance of your garments is like fragrance of Lebanon. A garden locked is my sister, my bride. Okay, that's a clue. The garden locked. So she's, you know, they're not having sex until the marriage, until it finally happens. A rock garden locked, a spring sealed up. And I think the more that he's denied, the more frustrated he gets. Solomon is not used to being told no. And so this locked garden, he's ready to consummate it as soon as all the proprieties are observed. Your shoots are an orchard of pomegranates with choice fruits, henna with nard plants, nard and saffron, calamus and cinnamon, with all the trees of frankincense, myrrh and aloes, along with all the finest spices. You are a garden spring, a well of fresh water, and streams flowing from Lebanon. I think he likes the skin color. He likes the variety. He likes the differences here. This is some of the things we're going to see with 1,000 women that he marries from all these other nations. So, the marriage proposal is recorded. That's what we just went through, verses 8 through 15. Shulamith pleads with the winds to carry her garden's fragrance to her shepherd lover, and imagines him coming into her garden. Okay, locked to Solomon, but remember, she's already expressed the intimacy with the shepherd that we looked at earlier. So awake, O north wind, and come south. May my garden breathe out its fragrance. Let its spices be wafted abroad. May my beloved come into his garden and eat its choice fruits. So yeah, she's not eager for the wedding night. She's not eager to be marrying Solomon. She's hoping that the shepherd gets her out of there. I have come into my garden, my sister, my bride. I have gathered my myrrh along with my balsam. I have eaten my honeycomb and my honey. I have drunk my wine and my milk. Eat, friends, drink, and imbibe deeply, O lovers. And then the song gets interesting here, and there's a lot of arguments about, is this Solomon? Is this the shepherd? I believe this is the shepherd, and he's intending to get her out of there. This is not recently, but this is prior to her being brought south. This is part of their past, part of their romance, part of their the trouble they allowed themselves to get into by becoming sexually intimate before their own marriage. It actually left her vulnerable to being grabbed up by the king, and he thought she was a maiden. All right, chapter 5. Shulamith has her second nightmare of losing her shepherd lover. And yeah, if he doesn't spring her quickly, then he'll be lost to her forever. I was asleep, but my heart was awake. A voice, my beloved, was knocking. Open to me, my sister, my darling, my dove, my perfect one. For my head is drenched with dew, my locks with the damp of the night. To which she replies, I have taken off my dress. How can I put it on again? I have washed my feet. How can I dirty them again? So he's hitting on her. He's expressing a sexual interest and a desire, and she has a headache, right? Or she couldn't be bothered. She has an objection, and oh, do we have to? I took off my dress, and you want me to go outside again? I washed my feet. Anyway, he propositions her, she turns him down, and he's gone. And she's now devastated. My beloved extended his hand through the opening, and my feelings were aroused for him, so she changes her mind, but now it's too late. I arose to open to my beloved, and my hands dripped with myrrh, my fingers with liquid myrrh on the handles of the bolt. I opened to my beloved, but behold, my beloved had turned away and had gone. My heart went out to him as he spoke. I searched for him, but did not find him. I called, but he did not answer me. Again, this is a dream. It's not real, but it's reflecting these fears that she has, that she's never going to see him again. He's going to be lost to her. The watchmen who make the rounds of the city found me. They struck me and wounded me. The guardsmen on the walls took away my shawl from me. Again, none of that really happened. This is part of her nightmare, part of her dream. You know, the king's not going to let her just roam the streets and get abused by the city police officers. But this is her nightmare as it's unfolding. Again, I adjure you, O daughters of Jerusalem. This is now the third time telling these virgins, don't play with fire. Don't be arousing or awakening Dode until it pleases. I'm sorry. We haven't quite reached that. This is a different adjuration. I adjure you, O daughters of Jerusalem, if you find my beloved, as to what you will tell him, for I am lovesick. If she can never see him again, maybe she can get a message to him. All right, solemnly charging the daughters of Jerusalem to help her find her shepherd lover. In response, not being familiar with her lover's appearance. Well, tell me what it looks like. Who is this guy? Okay? Another nail in the coffin for anybody who's trying to convince me that this is Solomon, that Solomon is the shepherd. If Solomon was the shepherd, they'd know Solomon. Everybody knows Solomon. Solomon's awesome. Anyway, what kind of beloved is your beloved, O most beautiful among women? What kind of beloved is your beloved that you thus adjure us? So they need a description. She's going to give a description, which is kind of silly if Solomon's who she's describing. Everybody knows Solomon. Again, they call her most beautiful among women. I think there was really a sense they didn't want her there either. My beloved is dazzling and ruddy, outstanding among 10,000. That shows up in some of our hymns too, by the way. He's the fairest of 10,000 to my soul. I'm the lily of the valley, he's the bride. Anyway, a lot of the hymns that we sing come from this book. Not necessarily in context, but we sing them anyway. His head is like gold, pure gold. His locks are like clusters of dates and black as a raven. So gold isn't the color, gold is the value, and black is the color, black as a raven. His eyes are like doves beside streams of water, bathed in milk and reposed in their setting. His cheeks are like a bed of balsam, banks of sweet-scented herbs. His lips are lilies dripping with liquid myrrh. Again, he is very descriptive about her, including breasts and everything else. She is descriptive of him, including things we don't normally talk about if we're not married to the person we're talking to. All right. His lips are lilies dripping with liquid myrrh. His hands are rods of gold set with beryl. His abdomen is carved ivory inlaid with sapphires. Okay, careful now. Where are you going with this? Okay. He's got six-pack abs, right? He's the underwear model. All right. His legs are pillars of alabaster set on pedestals of pure gold. His appearance, have you seen where all this went? His appearance is like Lebanon, choice as the cedars. His mouth is full of sweetness, and he is wholly desirable. This is my beloved, and this is my friend, O daughters of Jerusalem. This is the shepherd she's describing. It has nothing to do with Solomon. He's the villain. She doesn't love him. She's hoping to be rescued in this way. In response to the daughters of Jerusalem not being familiar with her lover's location, Shulamith describes where he has gone. Where has your beloved gone, O most beautiful among women? Now that we know what he looks like, where can we find him? Where has your beloved turned that we may seek him with you? My beloved has gone down to his garden, to the beds of balsam, to pasture his flock in the gardens and gather lilies. He really is a shepherd, a true, legitimate honest to goodness, professional shepherd. All right. I am my beloved's and my beloved is mine. He who pastures his flock among the lilies. So she gives them the description. Solomon sings Shulamith's praises once again for her physical beauty. It's like he's not giving up. He has to know at this point she's not receptive to his advances, and she's still a locked garden. Solomon probably hadn't figured that out yet. When's the last time Solomon actually saw? I don't know. It's interesting. His capacity is totally wrecked. You're as beautiful as Tirzah, my darling, and lovely as Jerusalem, and awesome as an army with banners. Very much not a description of an outdoor setting or a rustic setting or rural. Goodness, I got to hurry. Turn your eyes away from me, for they have confused me. Your hair is like a flock of goats that have descended from Gilead. He doesn't understand her. She's confusing to him. He's never had a woman like this, never seen a girl like this, and she's not making any sense. Your teeth, your temples, 60 queens and 80 concubines, maidens without number, but my dove, my perfect one, is unique. She is her mother's only daughter, pure child of one who bore her. The maidens saw her and called her blessed. The queens and the concubines also, they praised her, saying, "Who is this that grows like the dawn, as beautiful as the full moon, as pure as the sun, as awesome as an army with banners?" I mean, she's unlike anything those women had ever seen either. I went down to the orchard of nut trees to see the blossoms of the valley, to see whether the vine had budded or the pomegranates had bloomed. Before I was aware, my soul set me over the chariots of my noble people. All right, what's happening all here? Again, who is this? The second of three rhetorical questions: when she arrives, when she's prepared for the wedding, when she flees. She goes for a walk, and the king's orchard reminds her what she had left behind. Her soul then makes the decision to leave. Before I was aware, my soul set me. So it hits her. She's out of here. This is her escape. And there's manuscript puzzles and vocabulary there about the chariots that are going to help her get out of there. The chariots of her noble people. Who are they? Are the chariots of Amminadab or Amminadib? And is that going to be the method of her escape? Come back, O Shulamite. Come back, that we may gaze at you. Why should you gaze at the Shulamite at the dance of the two companies? More questions with respect to that. Okay. Chapter 7 and 8 in 3 minutes. Can we make it? All right. Spoiler alert, she gets away. They live happily ever after. Solomon actually praises something that he will never understand, something that he will ever know, what this true love is all about. I mean, this is almost like, I don't want to say it's, but you know, the Princess Bride and true love and all the storybook ending, this book talks about that. All right. The shepherd lover praises Shulamith for her beauty, seeing her for the first time in the royal garments. He can't believe it. How beautiful are your feet and sandals, O prince's daughter. The curves of your hips are like jewels, the work of the hands of an artist. Your navel is like a round goblet which never lacks mixed wine. All right, so he thinks she's pretty also, just like Solomon did. Your two breasts are like two fawns, twins of a gazelle. So he likes that too, just like Solomon did. Your neck is like a tower of ivory. Your eye is like the pools in Heshbon by the gate of Beth Rabim. Your nose is like the tower of Lebanon which faces towards Damascus. Again, some of these, yeah, they're lost to us. Your nose is like a tower. Not because it's so honking huge or it's so, you know, it's slender, it's delicate, it looks, you know, you had to be there. Your head crowns you like caramel, and the flowing locks of your head are like purple threads. Most of these, by the way, are northern geographic references: Lebanon, Damascus, Carmel. The king is captivated by your tresses. He's not talking about Solomon there. He's actually playing this up like he's captivated by this princess. That how beautiful and how delightful you are, my love, with all your charms. Your stature is like a palm tree. Your breasts are like clusters. I will climb the palm tree. I will take hold of its fruit stalks. Oh, may your breasts be like clusters of the vine, and the fragrance of your breath like apples, and your mouth like the best wine. So he's ready. I mean, this is, as far as he's concerned, she's escaped. They're back home. Let's get married tonight. Let's do this. So the shepherd lover is praising her for her beauty, seeing her for the first time in the royal garments. Shulamith anticipates a wonderful honeymoon with her shepherd lover and rejoices that she has saved herself for her husband. In other words, she escaped becoming sexually involved with Solomon. She's now exclusively the shepherd's, as she was before, as she is now once again. So your mouth like the best wine. It goes down smoothly for my beloved, flowing gently through the lips of those who fall asleep. There's a verse that needs a lot of work. I am my beloved's. His desire is for me. Come, my beloved, let us go out to the country. This is not calling for Solomon in the palace. This is, let's get out to the woods. Let us spend the night in the villages. Let us rise early and go to the vineyards. Let us see whether the vine has budded. Yeah, there's a clue. You know, gee, has the vine budded yet? It's just an excuse to get outdoors. She likes the outdoor. She's comfortable outdoors. There I will give you my love. The mandrakes have given forth fragrance. Remember when Reuben gave his mother the mandrake so that she could have a political power play with Jacob? Anyway, aphrodisiac qualities apparently. Over our doors and all choice fruits, both new and old, which I have saved up for you, my beloved. All right. And then finally, and I'm going a little long here. Shulamith anticipates the return to her hometown and the upcoming wedding night in her mother's house. For the third time, she's speaking on the danger of premarital sexual activity. The who is this? Again, for the third time, the rhetorical question. Shulamith and the shepherd arrive at the very apple tree where they awaken their love. So let's look at these. Oh, that you were like a brother to me who nursed at my mother's breast. I found you outdoors. I would kiss you. No one would despise me either. You know, if you're brother and sister, you can get away with stuff. You can, no one thinks anything weird if you go somewhere. Well, that's just the brother and sister. And so that becomes their cover to find someplace private. I would give you spiced wine to drink from my juice of pomegranates. Let his left hand be under my head, his right hand embrace me. Again, horizontal. I want you to swear, O daughters of Jerusalem, do not arouse or awaken love until she pleases. This third, who is this question? Coming up from the wilderness, leaning on her beloved. Beneath the apple tree, I awakened you. So this is not arousal. This is awakening. This is the full warning. There your mother was in labor with you. There she was in labor and gave you birth. This is also possibly where he himself was born. That's kind of a puzzle too. It's not totally clear. Also the language in speaking of birthing and speaking of delivery. Anyway. Some of it gets graphic. Some of this is about anatomy. Anyway, put me like a seal over your heart, like a seal on your arm, for love is as strong as death. Jealousy is as severe as Sheol. It flashes, its flashes are flashes of fire, the very flame of the Lord. Many waters cannot quench love, nor will rivers overflow it. If a man were to give all the riches of his house for love, it would be utterly despised. Now, what's the price you pay for something like this? And by the way, there is a price that's mentioned. Any marriage is a financial transaction. Solomon had rewarded her brothers greatly to marry her. We have a little sister. She has no breasts. What shall we do for our sister on the day when she is spoken for? So probably her father is dead. Their father is dead. We don't know if the mom's even still alive anymore either. They have a duty to find a husband for this skinny little girl that doesn't seem to be attractive yet, okay? Little do they know that when she does grow up, she's going to be, you know, well endowed, and Solomon will be dazzled, and the shepherd is dazzled. But right now, when she's just a little girl, they're convinced they're not going to get anything. If she is a wall, we'll build on her a battlement of silver. If she's a door, we'll barricade her with planks of silver. They're trying to figure out how to marry this girl. I was a wall, my breasts were like towers, then I became in his eyes like one who finds peace. Solomon had a vineyard at Baal Hamon. He entrusted the vineyard to caretakers. So part of the bride price is this vineyard contract. Each one was to bring 1,000 shekels of silver for its fruit. My very own vineyard is at my disposal. The 1,000 shekels are for you, Solomon. So it's a refund on the bride price. 200 are for those who take care of its fruit. O you who sit in the gardens, my companions are listening for your voice. Let me hear it. Hurry, my beloved, be like the gazelle or the young stag, not to escape, but to consummate this marriage and live happily ever after on the mountains of spices. All right. So in Shulamith's youth. Her brothers had been the guardians of her virginity, and very much a matter of family and even community business. In Deuteronomy 22, we saw that. They would conduct grand jury investigations if she was not a virgin on their wedding night. They would look into that. It was a matter for the family and the clan and the tribe, for as a matter of public record, even keeping the laundry there for the evidence and the testimony of her virginity. The dowry is returned. See, she had been a virgin. Solomon's dowry to her brothers was the profitable vineyard. The dowry is returned as Shulamith's own vineyard is being given to another. The song concludes with Shulamith's invitation to her lover to consummate their long-delayed marriage. All right, I am 5 minutes long. Any questions? Now, we'll come back on Tuesday night, Wednesday night, Thursday night. We've got three more this week. We're going to move into First Kings chapter 11. We're going to see all of Solomon's sin. We're going to see the beginning of his fall into the Ecclesiastes mindset, where he goes from not just 140 women, but to 1,000 women, and all of the evil that comes out of that. All right. Father, I thank you for this day. I thank you for truth. I thank you for the joys that we have. And I thank you, Father, for marital love. This is what you've designed us for, to be exclusive, to be dedicated, one man, one woman together in the lifelong commitment of marriage. We thank you for the passage in Proverbs 5 that addresses that beauty. We thank you for the object lesson here. And just like the examples that we had with the fool in Proverbs who kept wandering in the wrong part of town trying to find the harlot, this is another drama, Father, that shows the dangers that you can get into. And we thank you for Shulamith's sake that it ended well. But Father, I pray that we learn these lessons and be able to teach them to our children. And just thank you again for giving us biblical norms and standards that keep us as weirdos, Father, aliens and strangers in this world that has different values and norms for sexual activity. Father, we just give all these matters to you, thanking you for your truth. In Jesus Christ's name, amen.